The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Rebranded Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I've got Terry and Doug alongside once again. And once again, the Red Sox lose. They get swept by the Tampa Bay Rays. 7-5, your final score. I promise you, it was not as competitive as the score looks. Red Sox once again floundering around in this one, a kind of a fake rally in the eighth inning, but ultimately, Slayton comes in, gives up the rest of the game, and that's history for you. And speaking of history, the Red Sox made history twice today, this afternoon. So their first three hitters went 0-for-9 with 9 strikeouts. And that has not happened in Major League Baseball since 1901. So that's the first bit of history they made. And then by losing, the Red Sox are now 12 games under 500. In the month of June, for the first time since 1996. So, at the very least, if you can say this about the Red Sox, they're probably going to make history almost every single night. It's not going to be a good kind of history, but at least they're doing something. So, Doug, I'll lead you off tonight. Are we officially at rock bottom here?
Yeah, this is rock bottom. This is, like I said in the war room, I'm 35 years old. This is the worst team I've ever seen. Right, I grew up, you know, around the park, my dad working there. I've seen a lot. I've been paying attention to the Sox my whole life. This is the worst team I've ever seen for sure. And the 96 team, I'm pretty sure that was Nomar's. Was that Nomar's rookie year, 96?
Six or seven, yeah.
It might be 96, maybe not. So it's like at least they had, you know, the rookie of the year. They had something going on at least. I mean, maybe they were a bad team, but they had something to look forward to. And like we were saying last night, even the bad teams we've seen, they had Poppy. They had someone that you could come see. You knew he was going to hit a bomb. Someone exciting. This team is just the absolute worst. All right? Just ruining good pitching. Right? I mean, the pitching's been great, and it's just like it's just ruined, completely ruined. Everyone is just wasting away. Right? It's like Sonny Gray doesn't have that many good years left in him. And he's giving us a fantastic year, and it's just wasted. And this is, Johnny, move on too, right? I mean, they had guys to come see, right? And this guy, this team just has no one. You know, Jaron Duran used to kind of be that guy that was like, you could bring a kid to a game and be like, look at how that guy plays. You know, that's how you play baseball. And even that's faded away. There's just nothing to look forward to watching the games. And, you know, there's another, 4 months of this? It's rock bottom is the word I would use. Yeah.
So if I'm not mistaken, on Thursdays, Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow each rotate each week on which one will go on WEI on the Greg Hill Morning Show, and they get grilled. And I'm not a big Greg Hill guy, but they don't throw softballs at him. You know, they ask tough questions. And tomorrow's going to be an interesting one if we don't get some type of a passing bomb tonight. I can't imagine either one is looking forward to doing it. But I don't know where you go from here. Every word out of their mouth is essentially an insult to our intelligence. Okay. We've seen 4 championship teams. We traveled those journeys with those teams. So looking at this team, don't insult us. this is a bad baseball team, and there's no fixing it. Regardless of what the reports are, John Henry is asking around because his inept 11th choice chief baseball officer can't get it done. I don't know what to do from here. I honestly don't.
And that's why I think it is officially rock bottom at this point, especially when the icing on the cake for this one is after the game, we find out Garrett Crochet's lat strain is, quote, much worse than originally imagined. And he has no idea when he's going to start throwing again. And I read that and I just went, you know what? Shut him down.
Yeah.
Just shut him down at this point. And I know it's June and that might seem a bit extreme, but you guys are right. There's no fixing this team. You know, they're not one bat away, as we said last night. You know, their pitching has been phenomenal all year. Thank God for the two rookies pitching the way they have been. But eventually you're going to get to that trade deadline. Crochet's probably not going to be back by then. Who knows where Roman Anthony's going to be. Marcelo Meyer, the way he's going, might be in AAA at that point. So you're going to start trading guys away. You have to. It's malpractice if you don't. So I look at guys like Crochet and I say, you know what, just shut him down. And if he's, you know, 100% healthy in mid to late August and he wants to come back, fine. He can come back then. By then, Chapman should be sold. By then, Sonny Gray should be sold. So it's not going to matter anyway. It's just we've really gotten to that team, where you sell who you can sell on the team and you just fire who you want to fire, because I don't know how else you fix it from here. And today's game was kind of a good microcosm of what their season has been, because you go down 4-0 early. And look, Jake Bennett he wasn't horrible, but the Rays, I put in our chat room, they just small balled you to death. I mean, how many bunts did they try and lay down tonight, or this afternoon rather? It was like 5 or 6 at least. Some of them went foul, some of them, you know, didn't quite work, but they were showing you exactly why you could never be that team, because they were getting guys on base, moving runners over, stealing bases, bunting guys over. They tried a suicide squeeze at one point in like the third inning. It's just, and you know what? They can do that because they're the Rays. They're really good at it. And that's why they're a first place team. They were just completely showing you up tonight and showing you exactly why you can't get on their level at any point. You just don't have the talent that they do. So, and, you know, Maloney and O'Brien said in the broadcast, they keep identifying players that they're not big names. You know, other teams discard them and the Rays pick them up and they turn into these, you know, these team killers. Ryan Vallade, like I've heard of Ryan Vallade. He's bounced around the league quite a bit. I think at one point the Red Sox almost signed him or had a minor league invite for him. And now he's killing you. Like we were all happy when Jake Magnum got traded out of, you know, the division to Pittsburgh. Well, they just replaced him with another guy just like him. I mean, that's where other organizations are just smarter than you. And I don't see the Red Sox being able to do anything like that going forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Rays do always have, you know, prospects, but it's also because they can't sign anybody. Right. So all they can have is prospects. But they do a great job of developing those guys. Absolutely. They always have, and they always kill us, right? And they do a way better job of bringing in, like you said, no-name guys and building them up, and then they go, you know. But they find a way to win with that process. And right, it was like, you know, with the suicide squeezes and the bunts, it was like they were like, well, we can just try anything in this game, right? We can just do whatever we want. It's basically a practice. Like, oh, if this bunt doesn't work, whatever, you know, we've seen it now. You know, it's just, that's pretty much, that's how it felt. Like, they were just saying, let's just try whatever we can try and see what works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. We're probably still going to win this game. And it was embarrassing today.
So, you mentioned Garrett Crochet. The dude might be injury prone. I mean, he's had a bunch of injuries. He's only really pitched 2 full seasons of Major League Baseball. And I think with the I think last season he was healthy from start to finish. I think that other relatively full season also had an injury in there. Here's the crazy part. I mentioned this in the war room earlier. Look at the three players you traded for him. Kyle Teal, who I think is out with an injury. I don't think he's played a game yet. So I don't think we're too worried long term. Chase Mydroth, who was probably the last piece of that package, is hitting 274 with a 344 on base right now. Not a power guy, so I think five home runs is probably a lot for him at this point. If he ends up with 15 to 20, oh my goodness, that's probably elite for what his profile is. And then Braden Montgomery just made his debut the other night, hit a home run. He's hitting 400 right now, a tiny sample size. But, you know, he was our best outfield prospect. And I think we're trending towards saying maybe the White Sox won the trade. You know, Crochet would just be sitting on their injured list if he was still there, if they intended to build around him. But here's the ultimate kick in the nuts. The Chicago White Sox are leading the American League Central right now. The Guardians, it's by percentage, because I think the Guardians have played a couple more games, have a couple more wins, but they have the best win percentage and therefore are listed at the top of the American League Central. When we made that trade the winter before last, we weren't the rebuilding team. We were the contending team trying to go for it. The White Sox were the rebuilding team. It looks like the rebuild is over. And I think that's why they won the trade. They're far and away a better team than we are. And we're going to play them at some point, I think twice. And I think at the beginning of the year, we probably assumed that would be a cupcake match. Not going to be. And I'm not going to even say that I'm shocked that the White Sox have taken this step forward. They did have one of the best farm systems, as I pointed out. And over the winter, I said, it's probably going to be a fast rebuild. Now, did I expect it to be this year? No, I didn't. But every year, a team like them takes that step forward. Last year, my bold prediction was the Oakland Athletics would be that team, and it didn't happen. But they were leading the West, by the way, but they seem to have fallen off a little bit, and the Mariners are finally heating up and being the, you know, the borderline juggernaut that many of us thought they would be. But, you know, it's a tale of two executives. You've got a guy in Chicago that's truly, truly handcuffed with a low payroll. Unless something's happened in the last winter, Andrew Benintendi is their biggest free agent contract of all time. It was something like 5 years, 90 million. No, 5 years, 75 million. That's what it was. And they've got an executive that truly knows how to identify talent, either acquire it or draft it, and, you know, and build a winner. And it seems like they're on their way. If this was going to be a normal winter, they could probably make some good signings. You know, maybe they'll sign the Ranger Suarez of next winter and beef up that rotation. Maybe they'll get a nice bat in there. I don't know, but our guy is the dumbest in the league. Literally, there. I don't think there's an executive. We've made fun of the Angels for a long time now, and they're still bad. But I think we're worse. I really think we're worse. I think we're the lowest IQ organization in Major League Baseball. And it's just so infuriating to look at what got us here and the fact that they don't even have the first inkling of how to, you know, reverse the course and make some smart moves.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of those low budget teams are getting smarter and we're getting dumber. It's kind of, it looks like, you know, the White Sox, even the A's, you know, they got guys hitting bombs for them, right? They got some good young players. It looks like all these teams that have been jokes, you know, are starting to hire smart guys and we're hiring dumb guys. And it shows. It really shows what a GM can do in Major League Baseball. A GM's so important.
Yeah, and the other thing about the White Sox is they did what Breslow didn't want to do, where they didn't just rely on their farm system to come up and lead the way. They went out and paid for Murakami, which, you know, I would have liked him here. I know everyone at the time said, you know, Akimoto's the better guy. Murakami might struggle in the big leagues, but I don't know. Seems to be doing pretty damn well so far.
Yeah.
So they went out and signed him. They paid money for Randall Grichuk, which, you know, not a huge piece, but a nice right-handed bat off the bench that can, you know, provide a little pop. They signed Sir Anthony Dominguez to be their closer. You know, they went out and they just spent money in places that made sense. They didn't, you know, hand out huge contracts, but they filled holes where it made sense. Whereas Breslow, I complain about all the time, like, what did you do for your bullpen? You did absolutely nothing. You just brought back the same guys and then said, okay, well, Zach Kelly or someone like that is going to fill in the middle. And the middle of your bullpen's been trash. And now it looks like the back end of your bullpen might be trash because Whitlock can't stay healthy and Slayton looks like a totally different guy in the worst way possible. So the White Sox are doing it in a way that Breslow could have done it, but he just doesn't have, he doesn't have that thinking of being able to do that. And the thing about the Crochet trade is the timing of that one is kind of hurting the Red Sox, because if they knew at the time how good Early and Tolley could be at the major league level, they probably don't have to make that trade, right? They still might because it's tempting and the guy's right there, but they could have just as easily, if they had known, say, well, you know what? We can just go sign Ranger Suarez. You can still make the Sonny Gray trade where you didn't really give up much. And you still have a top of the, you know, at least top half of the league rotation, because that's what it's been this year. Crochet's barely pitched and they still have one of the best pitching rotations in all of baseball. So imagine if they knew that, okay, we don't have to make that trade. You'd still have Montgomery, you know, progressing through your minor league system. You'd still have Mydroth, who he might be here instead of IKF. And look, IKF's been better of late, but he might be that guy off the bench instead of him or Monasterio. Or he might just be playing second base every day. And don't forget about Wickelman Gonzalez, who you also traded as part of that deal. Now, he hasn't pitched for the White Sox yet this season, but he's down in the AAA system with a sub-3 ERA. So at some point, they'll probably call him up. He's still just 24 years old. So, you know, that's a valuable bullpen piece that at some point they'll probably call up to the big league roster to help supplement their bullpen. And then you mentioned Kyle Teal. I mean, sure, he's been hurt. You can't really plan for that, but would you rather have Kyle Teal here or rotating between Narvaez, Gasper, and Connor Wong the way that you have been? I'd much rather have Kyle Teal. So it's tough. I mean, that trade is kind of not aging very well right now, and it's really just because Crochet can't get on the mound. Once he's on the mound, he's great. But Terry might be right. Like, are we starting to see that this guy might be a little bit injury prone? Because, you know, he's had a couple of injuries now and he's had a lot of setbacks, which that's the part that concerns me. As soon as he starts to ramp up again, something else is bothering him and they got to shut him down. That's not usually a good sign. So right now, that trade is not looking good for the Red Sox at all.
Crochet turns 27 on the 21st of this month. So at the tail end of his 26th year, you look down at his innings pitched. As a reliever, he pitched, he made 54 appearances in 2021, had a 2.82 ERA, pretty good, but then he needed Tommy John. 2023, he pitched 13 games. This is all in relief again, a 3.55 ERA. And then finally, and that was actually only 12 and two thirds innings in 2023. So he probably came back from the Tommy John at the tail end of the year. And then 2024, 146 innings. 2025, 205 innings. And only 30 this year. So he's only had, like I said, two relatively full seasons. And I don't know. I mean, if somebody wants him, I mean, do you do it? Like, I don't know. And the reason why it feels like it should be an automatic yes. But when you look at the writing on the wall, you're losing Sonny Gray after the season. You know, totally and early, you know, I mean, it's encouraging, but who really knows? I mean, who really knows? So I just don't know if you can give up that stability, and you have Ranger. So
it would need to be a huge package for me, at least, to want to think that's, it would have to be a lot. And I don't even know, but a lot.
Yeah, I would consider it if the package was filled with guys who are on the cusp of being major league ready, right? Like, I don't want to trade Crochet for just a bunch of 18-year-olds that you won't see for 5 years. But if you can get someone else's version of, like, a Connor Griffin from Pittsburgh, or, you know, probably not Royce Lewis now because his value is so down and he's injury prone, but someone like that. Like, if you can get someone else's version of Bobby Witt before he becomes Bobby Witt, right? Before he really gets established, and you get that sort of future gem piece, I would definitely consider it. Now, again, you've got the wrong guy in the front office to be able to identify that. So you got to fire him first and get the right guy in who actually knows who that player is and where to go find them. But I would consider it, but it would have to be something like that. Because the thing is, like, if you do that, you trade him away, well, then Ranger Suarez becomes your ace, which is fine. At times he can pitch like that, but he's already 30, and he's already kind of not a hard thrower. What's Ranger Suarez going to look like when he's 33? Like, is he still going to be pitching like a top part of the rotation kind of guy, or is he going to start to get smacked around a little bit more? You know, like you said, Early and Tully, they look good right now, but what if Tully never develops that other pitch? What if he's just a fastball changeup guy and the league figures him out, and suddenly, you know, a year or two down the road, you're looking at it saying, yeah, he might go to the bullpen. And then what, Connelly Early has to be your ace? I mean, that's a slippery slope. So it would have to be like a king's ransom of, like, we've identified who the next Bobby Witt Jr. is, and this team's willing to trade him. Then I'd consider it. Otherwise, I wouldn't. I think at this point, you've made the trade, you sign him to the contract, you got to live with what he's going to give you.
It's tough for me. I think Ranger's going to be fine. I mean, he's already a crafty guy. He's a high IQ guy.
I agree, yeah.
Will he have an ERA north of 4 for one of his 5 years? Maybe. Possibly. The thing I worry about with Tully is durability. Like, he's got Tommy John written all over him. And how many starts do we hear about him? Oh, his fastball's down 2 miles an hour. Like, that's not good when your velocity's going up and down. That's an arm that is probably taking a lot of abuse. So when Breslow gets fired, I don't think Andrew Bailey stays. I don't want him to stay. I just want a full reset. I want to go back to the old days where the manager picks the hitting coach and the pitching coach. That worked out pretty well for quite a while. That's what I would.
100 years.
Exactly. I don't want the nerds in the front office trying to figure it out, to try to fit their philosophy, which might not even be a valid philosophy. It might be fantasy that they're cooking up there. And yeah, just let this, I've said time and time again on this show, the smartest person in your organization should be the manager. That's the guy you want in the dugout. Okay. And if he's the smartest guy, he probably knows who's going to get that pitching program up and running. You know, if the front office can find ways to make things healthy, you know, to in terms of improving durability and, you know, through medicine and all that, through, I don't know, the TB12 program. I'm just throwing that out there. But just if they can find ways to help, you know, pitchers take care of themselves, then fine, you know, implement that stuff. But I want to see a full reset. And that's what's so depressing about the coming strike. I mean, we might not get to see this for a long time. This could be a long time. I mean, Dodgers fans just have to wait it out. They've got a bunch of studs coming back, and they're just going to pick the ball up, you know, right where they left it. For us, it's a mystery. Like, what does the future look like? What type of executive will we have? Will we have the ability to identify talent via trades, via the draft, via scouting, and all that? I don't know. It'll be fascinating when we finally get there, but
if we get a GM like the old days and just sign big names, you know, like kind of we've always done, and we've always mixed having young guys with big name veterans.
I mean, I don't think we need to necessarily chase the Sotos of MLB, but get the Pete Alonso deal done.
Yeah,
I consider that to be a mid-level deal, really.
I mean, I consider Pete a big name, like a big name guy.
So. Yeah, but yeah. Just make smart signings.
Right.
You know, Dave Dombrowski giving Kyle Schwarber 4 years ago a 4-year, $80 million deal. What was so painful about that? You know, why wasn't there a bidding war? Why did that just simply get it done? And he was the guy that just kept it simple. You know what? Hits a lot of home runs and he gets on base. I think we should sign that.
Yeah.
No, it's true. They don't need to become radical in the front office, but just do the obvious stuff. You know, like Pete Alonso's a great one. He fits your ballpark. You play half your games at Fenway, Pete Alonso would feast on that left field wall. So, and they were right there. It's just that he wanted an extra year and they got spooked because, oh, we're worried about you getting old. Well, every player is going to get old, guys. I mean, you can't just not sign anyone past the age of 34, 35. Like, eventually you're going to have to get a little uncomfortable. And they used to do that. They used to do that with JD Martinez. He was not exactly a young guy when they gave him a 5-year deal. But look how that worked out. You got a World Series out of it. So I don't need them to get radical and start handing out 13-year deals or, you know, doing stuff like that. But do the obvious thing. Go get a guy like Pete Alonso when you've got the money to do it. You've got an open position for him. And, okay, so it takes an extra year that maybe you're a little uncomfortable with. You can be uncomfortable for 1 year. That's okay. Like, if he's asking for, you know, 8 years, then okay, sure, I get that. But one extra year, just, you know, bite the bullet sometimes. And I feel like this front office lately, they're so scared of the bad contract. They are so scared of a deal going sour on them. And in a way, I get it, because the big free agent contracts that they used to hand out, you know, Carl Crawford, right? Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, Adrian Gonzalez. Yeah, there's been a lot of flops in their past. And I can understand why Henry is hesitant, but that doesn't mean you can just stop trying. That doesn't mean you go, okay, well, I'm not touching the free agent market now because I don't want another Carl Crawford. Eventually, you've got to dip your toe back in the water because, as we've seen, other teams are still going to do it. And you're going to get left behind if you just decide you're too scared to start giving up those deals again. So he's got to, you know, find the right guy to put in the front office in the first place. But then, yeah, go back to being a little bit uncomfortable, because that's when you were at your best. And yeah, sometimes those free agent deals didn't work out, but when they do, it's such a catapult for your team. you know, to get back into contention, which the Red Sox desperately need right now.
Yeah, Shane Victorino's, Mike Napoli's. You know, they get, you build a good team around guys like that, and with the young talent, you know, that's the path to success in the MLB. Kind of always has been. You know, and they're getting away from it. They used to do it and haven't done it for a long time.
So what is the greatest Red Sox free agency contract of all time?
Ortiz.
I wouldn't say Ortiz. I'm talking because it wasn't Manny. A blockbuster at Manny. The time. It was Manny. That's exactly
Manny or
it.
Pedro, I guess.
8 years, 160. Doesn't that sound like a 2024 contract? But Manny got that in 2001 or 2000 or 2001. It was pre-John Henry. I know that.
Yeah, I think 2000.
It was a Dan Duquette signing. Yeah. And so
worth
that's
every penny.
That's number one. Number two, I think, if we're just looking at this century, I think is JD Martinez. 5 years, 110. He had a couple annoying years where, you know, it didn't look like he was really going for it. But I mean, when you look at the baseball reference page, there wasn't like, oh, he was terrible that year. You know, he didn't have like an Andrew Benintendi year. You know, he was never that bad.
No, yeah. He's still getting doubles.
You know, we question the attitude at times. And in hindsight, I don't know if we were being fair or not. But getting back to – so Pete Alonso, I think, would have fit that bill. And he is a free agent in 2031. So that's, what, 4 more years after this. That puts him at age 35. That's what we were afraid of. We were afraid of Peter Alonso being on the Red Sox at age 35. And reminder here, David Ortiz probably put up the best season of his career in his final season at age 40. And we're worried about Pete Alonso at age 35.
Yeah, he hit like 700 in the World Series at like 38.
Yes, 688 if you want the exact stat.
Yeah,
and we were trash, really. I think our postseason batting average that year was like 204. That was the batting average. You just had some timely hits from Ortiz, two from Victorino.
Yeah.
You know,
man. Johnny Gomes.
I love Shane Victorino.
Napoli had the home run against Verlander.
I think Victorino is my favorite player of that year. You know, Napoli gets a lot of glory.
I swear to God, this is true on my life. The day we signed Shane Victorino, I texted my family the Red Sox would win the World Series. Like I swear to God, I already loved him from Philly. Like he was awesome.
Yeah.
And I knew we had a good team. I knew it. And like I remember that signing just being like that is putting us over the edge with a veteran winner. And yeah, he was awesome.
I remember reading a Facebook post, the big Philly publication is, and the title of it said Red Sox fans will love Shane Victorino. And yeah, in 2013, I had us winning the division that year, but never in my wildest imaginations did I think we're ever going to win the World Series. I mean, Detroit was the wagon at that point.
They were awesome.
And Scherzer wasn't quite Scherzer coming into the season, but won the Cy Young. You know, that was his Hall of Fame breakout year, really. And yeah, I mean, that's why that one's one of my favorite. I mean, 04 is always the GOAT World Series because it finally happened. But 2013 was just so unforeseen. And there were so many unsung heroes. Like, who on that team sucked besides JD? I keep doing it. Steven Drew. Like, everybody was good. Well, Middlebrooks wasn't super great, I guess.
But it wasn't even so much, like, that they were good. Like, they were just cool. They were fun to root for.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
they were a fun team.
They were believable.
Yeah.
And Mike Napoli, don't get me wrong, I was pumped when we signed him. And I remember all winter people saying, well, you can't play first base. And he was Scoops McGee over there.
I think that's pretty universal, like, throughout the fans that 13 is number two. Like, I think most Red Sox fans
would hope so.
I think so.
I mean, 07 was great, though.
Were just, like, 07 and 18, they were just awesome.
The Beckett trade with Mike Lowell is one of my favorite of all time.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, people got to remember how that played out. Epstein was fighting with Lucchino, left Fenway Park on Halloween night in a gorilla suit, and was gone for about a month. And I think at that point, they didn't know if he was gone forever or what. There were two co-GMs, basically, two guys running it. They traded Hanley Ramirez to get Josh Beckett and Mike Lowell, who was just a throw-in. The Marlins didn't want to pay the deal, so take Lowell. Okay, fine. They did it. And then, you know, so that was 05 coming into 06. So you had a full season of Beckett before the World Series year and Mike Lowell. And so it was just cool. And Curt Schilling was still there at that point. And I think only has like two or three postseason losses ever.
Yeah.
And what was he, 40 years old, I think, in that World Series?
Yeah, I think so.
He was up there.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That was just a fun team, you know. Yeah. And you had Pedroia in the World Series.
Yeah.
Jacoby Ellsbury, who was in AA as recently as that previous July.
Yeah, we had some young talent on that team. And, you know, 18 was great too, you know, because it was just like, it was fun to watch them just be dominant. Dominance is fun too.
I feel bad about saying this, but for some reason, I was always annoyed with that team in some ways. Like, I hated David Price. Like, he just completely lost me on the Fortnite thing. And, you know, Chris Sale was obviously good. He was kind of cooked by the time the
Mookie was awesome.
Yeah, but Mookie, I was a little aggravated that we weren't getting the signing, and I was kind of putting it on him too. I'm like, why wouldn't he want to just do a deal to stay? So there were just aspects of that team that was kind of annoying, but it was
the 13 season. I mean, the marathon, like, it had everything. It really, that season was magical.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, we were the team of destiny.
Yeah. And
I remember in that game one, we lose to the Tigers in the ALCS. That was the Lester Anibal Sanchez matchup. Mm-hmm. And someone texted me and said, well, that was the series. And I mean, there was a lot of, you just can't afford to lose one on an epic Lester start.
Right.
But you know, the magic happened. And
we won. I think we won the 1-0 game against Verlander, right? Napoli hit a solo home run. I think we won that game 1-0.
That was it. Yeah.
In Detroit.
In Detroit. It was an afternoon game. I remember that. He clubbed one to straightaway center. And then the Ortiz game, was that game two? I think it was. I think it was game two.
It must have been, yeah.
And then we tied it. And so that tied it. And then
we went up 2-1.
Yeah. And then I think the Tigers won one more.
Yeah, they were a great team. They were it's crazy that team didn't win a World Series.
I know.
They were awesome.
And then the thing about it, too, is, you know, everybody says Dave Dombrowski just blows up farms. But I don't know. I mean, he built that team. They sucked. They sucked before Dombrowski got there. And he built that team. If you win
a World Series, it's worth it. If you can get the ring, you get the ring.
Yeah, it's about winning. I mean, you know, ask Yankee fans if they would want Dave Dombrowski to have had control over one of their teams over the last 17 years, right? Because they were complaining on New York radio this week that, you know, Yankees fans are saying, you know what, as much as, like, it's fun to poke at the Red Sox right now, you would take their last 16 years over theirs because we got two titles mixed in there. So, you know, that's part of it, right? Like, yeah, we're, you know, we go first to last, but, you know, you get the two championships mixed in New York. They're always in it. They're always going to be good, but they always come up short. So, ask them if they want to have Dave Dombrowski take over for a year. And right. Oh no, we have to trade some of our prospects, but yeah, he might get a World Series out of it. Yeah. So
if the Yankees win the World Series, is it brutal or is it?
Yes.
Because the way I look at it,
I don't want to see the Knicks win. I don't want to see the Yankees win ever. No, it kills me.
Maybe I'll feel differently, you know, when it happens. But I'm like, when I look in the Yankees, I see a team that's trying, you know, and yeah. I kind of have to respect that. I think we've lost our license to talk shit. I don't think we can talk shit to the Yankees. What's my comeback going to be when Caleb Durbin is my third baseman?
I will have one.
I mean, I talk endless shit with my friends, but I've got no play on so many arguments.
The only play is you guys blow it every year. That's the play right now.
at least they're trying.
Aaron Judge stinks when the lights are bright.
Why didn't anybody want Cody Bellinger? In hindsight, I've got a little bit of remorse there. And he was a lefty, so it wasn't a great fit, and we had a million outfielders. But why didn't other teams want him? Why did the Yankees – why did he just fall into their lap? You know, he's such a great defender, former MVP, just totally undervalued. And, you know, with the Yankees, go back to 2019 when Altuve walked off Chapman. You know, I hated the Astros may as well have been my favorite team of all time. Like, that's how badly I wanted the Yankees to lose. But now the torture of these last two executives we've had, I'm like, whatever. You know, they weren't going to beat the Dodgers anyway. I did not lose any sleep over the fact that they were in that series. We knew who was going to win that. You know, New York didn't bring the fight that Toronto did last year. So I don't know.
In 2001, Game 7, right, Diamondbacks and the Yankees, my entire family was in the living room, my grandparents, my parents, all my brothers, and we cheered like the Red Sox just won the World Series. Yep. We went crazy.
And the sad thing is like, you know, I mean, they just had
we haven't won yet. Like, we just, like,
well, true. We hated
them so much. And they were winning, and we hated them so much.
But at the same time, like, I mean, I was rooting for the Diamondbacks also.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the couple of planes went into the towers. A lot of people died. You know, if you're ever going to.
Maybe that's cool. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, you know, I was glad that Arizona won. And, you know, they had Randy Johnson. Yeah. Kurt Schilling was on that team.
Yeah, Luis Gonzalez's team was awesome.
Yeah. I'm
with Doug on this one. Like, I don't think it would be brutal per se because, you know, they've had a good team for a long time, but I kind of want the Aaron Judge narrative to be like, he's the Dan Marino of baseball. Like, all-timer, Hall of Famer, never won the big one. I don't know. As someone who is still a Yankee hater, and yeah, I get it. We have no excuse to be throwing stones at them. But you know what? We got more championships than they do the last 20 years. So I'll take it. I want Judge to be that guy that just, yeah, great talent, but never won the big one.
Yeah.
And he is
60 home runs and shove it.
Yeah.
He's so choky, though. I mean, he had a slump when he was setting that record. I mean, he could have had probably if he had a Kyle Schwarber mentality up there, just fearless.
Yeah,
he probably could have put up an extra six or eight on top of that. But the moment got to him, and you know it didn't work out. So I don't know. But yeah, and then you know, and then back to reality, we're on fire Breslow watch and they say it's not going to happen, but I don't know. I just, you know, it has to happen. Then we have to see who's the next guy.
I'm not even expecting it until I see that tweet come up. I'm just.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. With I mentioned this on a recent show with Chaim Bloom. I had no idea if he was or not. I mean, I thought, well, perhaps there could be a reason, you know, that they keep him. Bloom was like so much. He was a shrewd politician compared to Breslow. Breslow literally needs a teleprompter. If anybody needs a teleprompter, it's Breslow.
Yeah.
You know, with somebody smart writing it. You know, yeah. Bloom could sound smart and win people over. That's why he had the Bloominati. Breslow doesn't have anybody. And who in that front office? I mean, John Henry's allegedly trying to do the deals. One of the least respected owners in baseball is trying to be the GM to salvage this. And who does Breslow have in that front office that he's friends with? I don't think anybody.
No. Yeah. I don't think so either.
Who's he have in the world that he's friends with? I'd like to know.
Yeah.
I don't think many.
Yeah.
His kids probably hate him.
Well, and to your point about Bloom, I mean, that's why he also got a job, you know, right after getting fired, because you're right. Like he at least could articulate himself and is a likable guy. You know, you can question a lot of his decisions while he was here, but yeah, people still respect him. Breslow, like once he gets blown out of here, he's going to have to take a real low level job somewhere else. Yeah. If anyone even wants to hire him, because his reputation is just so bad and people just don't like dealing with him and speaking with him. And that's a big part of the business. So yeah, it's going to be tough for him when that eventually happens. So it's funny, cause like I predicted it last week because they had the off day on the Thursday again, and they're going into that New York series. I thought they're coming back from the road, kind of a sweet time to do it. They do have an off day tomorrow and they're going back to Fenway. World Cup also starts tomorrow, so there's some distraction. You know, people are going to be tuning into that. I don't know. I don't want to predict it again because I got it wrong last time. Eventually, I want to be right about one of these, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, tomorrow could be a good day for them to do it, but I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not really expecting it, but when it happens, I obviously will not be surprised. I'm just waiting for it.
I mean, there was a report just, 2 days ago that said the Red Sox aren't considering it. So I just feel like it's probably at least a few weeks out at this point. You know, we'll see. I don't see any Texas Rangers matchups, but arguably you have your three best guys going. Sonny Gray, Ranger Suarez, Connolly Early. And yes, I would put Early ahead of Tully right now. In a big game, I'm giving the ball to Early.
I think we're getting DeGrom and Eovaldi.
Oh, perfect.
Is that right?
I feel like I was listening to the radio at work. I feel like Middlebrooks said we were – I think they said that.
Yeah, because they're all listed as TBD. But, yeah,
Eovaldi's got an ERA, 4.26. Let's see how he's done in his last few. He's not pitching well. He's in his last three outings, he's given up 4 earned, 4 earned, 5 earned. Strikeouts look okay, except for in his last start. His most recent one against Kansas City, he only struck out 3, walked 3. What's DeGrom up to? Let's see right here. He's got to be, 36, 37 by now?
I mean, he's still pretty solid.
Yeah. I think he's 36.
Right, I don't know his numbers, but I felt like he's been pitching well.
He turns 30. No, let's see. He's 37. Wow, he turns 38 this month.
Wow.
Jake DeGrom turns 38 this month. Wow. 3.18.
Yeah.
Earned run average. Last. This ain't good. His last two outings were scoreless against the St. Louis Cardinals, Cleveland Guardians. The start before that against the Astros, he gave up 2 earned. He did get shelled 4 starts ago against the Angels of all teams. 6 earned runs. What's his strikeout per nine? 10.7. That's borderline elite for a starting pitcher. Still he might leave the game with an injury, but he's still pitching really good. Yeah. So I don't know. That sounds like a win. I'm not going to say Evaldi is definitely a win. I mean, that dude pounds the zone, and, you know, I think you can easily light him up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and Ranger, I don't know, hasn't looked super great. And Early's given up a ton of home runs, so.
It's
going to
be a tough weekend.
Yeah.
Are the Rangers 500 right now?
I don't know if they are, actually.
Let's see. They were one game under last I checked. They are two games under.
Yeah, two under.
I don't know if they're playing today or if they have played. Let's see. Not good radio when you're doing it on the fly. They're about to start their game right now with the Royals. So they'll either be three under or one under by the time we play them. But if you want to get fixed, just play the Red Sox.
Yep.
It's all you need sometimes. Yep. That could be, the three wins they need, getting back over 500, depending on what they do today. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a tough weekend. Also, it's going to be interesting because they're doing Papelbon and Middlebrooks in the booth this weekend. I know Pat Bunn's doing at least one of them. So they're going to have to put a little bit of a leash on him because Red Sox getting blown out. He's going to have a hard time containing himself. So that'll be interesting.
He's done it before, and I think he was just too much of a wild card. They put him in the studio, which is perfect. But I think he knows what he's doing now. So, he knows a thing or two about etiquette on camera. So it could be brilliant.
Yeah, I mean now's a good time to bring in a guy like that, because I mean, why not?
You're developing players. Let's develop some broadcasters.
And ratings are down anyway. That's one way to bring him back up. Just let Papelbon loose in the booth. Luckily, Red Sox mercifully cannot lose tomorrow. They have an off day tomorrow, so enjoy the peace with that at least. They'll have a three-game set against the Rangers this weekend. All of them are – well, Saturday's an afternoon game. They're on Peacock on Sunday. So if you don't have Peacock, you're spared the Red Sox, I think. So that's another good bit of news there. We will be on the air tomorrow. We'll be doing a show tomorrow, so be sure to check that out. We'll be sending it out whenever we're